The Bureau of Meteorology has revamped its website, and to say that people have strong opinions about it is an understatement. Whether you like or loathe it, the flood of your reactions has shown me one thing. You love weather. It's about so much more than just small talk. So what is it about the weather that has us so obsessed? In a moment, you'll meet a man who's literally written a book called Weather Obsession. But first, Nate Byrne, the ABC's very own meteorologist. You've probably seen him on ABC News Breakfast. He was literally there 3 minutes ago. Nate, thank you for running into the studio to talk to me about the weather.
I'll take it. You know, I would run anywhere to come have a chat with you, especially if it's to do with the weather. You know that.
What is it about this website redesign that is getting so much attention?
Well, who hasn't looked at the Bureau of Meteorology website at some point, right? It's the most popular government website there is, and by a long way. I mean, it's not very often that people wake up in the morning and go to something.gov.au other than the Bureau of Meteorology, because you need to figure out what it is you're going to wear. You know, weather's one of those things that really matters to people in a practical way every single day. And when the way that you get the information and the actual information that's available to you changes, I understand why people get a bit upset. I mean, for me, it's caused me an absolute nightmare. I'm having trouble finding half of the stuff that I usually use to do my job every day. But, you know, we're persevering.
I mean, it's literally your job. Not everyone gets to be a meteorologist, unfortunately. Where did your own interest in weather begin?
I think for me, it was as a kid. The meteorology and the being a television weather presenter, two very separate things. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a TV weather presenter because I thought they only had to do 5 minutes work a day at the end of the news. I thought that meant more time to play. I was very wrong. But the weather side of things, I think, yeah, as a kid, I grew up in WA. My parents used to take us down to the local boat harbour when there was a frontal system coming in, and we'd watch the lightning, you know, coming in over the Indian Ocean, and then try and run from, it's probably very dangerous, you know, it was the 80s, so different standards now perhaps, but we'd run from the edge of the water back to the car and try to beat the rain. You know, it was one of the things I'd love doing, especially in summer, and used to do it pretty regularly. And I think that started to get me interested in what's going on. And, you know, the weather's this huge, massive sort of problem that needs to be solved every day to try to predict the future. And I just find that such an interesting challenge that I get to do every single day.
Yeah, the forecasting part is really interesting. Forecasters do get it wrong from time to time. They're pretty good and they're better now than they used to be. Yeah. People love to point out when they do. How do you respond to those sorts of criticisms?
You try predicting the future. I mean, come on. I get it. The problem with forecasting is that people want to know exactly what's going to happen. And unfortunately, that's literally not possible to nail perfectly every single time. We get pretty darn close, pretty darn often, which is amazing, you know, and we can give you a good idea about what's going to happen, not only over the next 24 hours, but out potentially as far as 7 days. Oh, by the way, anyone telling you anything beyond 7 days? It's rubbish. Oh. Don't think about it. Yep, not worth your time. There is far too much chaos in the system, and little tiny errors at the start grow really, really big, really, really quickly. So beyond 7 days, it's not worth thinking about. When there is criticism, it's often because the type of weather information that you've received hasn't really demonstrated the error bars, the left and right of arc of what's really going on. You know, when you see a forecast for a capital city that says a shower or two, the number of times people have had written to me or had a go at me and said, hey, mate, look up, it's clear blue skies. And I have to say, yes, but it's also 11 o'clock in the morning. There's a heck of a lot more of the day to come, you know. Like, whereas if you dig into the forecast a little bit more and get it a little bit more information, then often it turns out they weren't wrong. They just maybe you didn't get the full story about what was going to happen over any 24-hour period.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Nate Byrne, our meteorologist here at the ABC, about weather obsession, really. Off the bat, back of the bomb website redesign and the strong opinions that you have had about it, you are already sending me so many emails, texts. But I do want to read this one out from Rose, who says, one hot summer evening a few years ago, I checked the bomb for updates. The summary: an oppressive night. Was so poetically astute that I sent a message to the widget on the site. Rose says, to my surprise and delight, someone, an actual real person, replied. And we had a brief discussion about language, meteorology, and the power of metaphor. Well, that's a positive story about the Bureau.
Do you know, that is one of my favourites taken. It sits right next to the other one that is often comes at the same time as an oppressive night, and it's a sultry night. That's an official, it's an official forecast term, and I love it so much. But, you know, that's because forecast, the science of weather came long after we knew about weather and talking about weather. So we've got all of these sort of common phrases that have moved into the science, you know, rather than having scientific phrases that then go out into the public realm. So, you know, we get things like a fine forecast, which sounds kind of dull, but it means it's a beautiful day. No rain is actually all it means. Language in the weather is always very interesting, I think.
That thing about language in the weather is so interesting and kind of the perfect segue to bring in Laurie Zion, who's also with us today. Laurie is a professor of journalism at La Trobe University and the author of a book titled The Weather Obsession. Laurie, welcome to Life Matters.
G'day, Tegan, and hi, Nate.
Laurie, it's been far too long, my friend. How are you?
Good. But can I jump in on just something you said, and that is the term fine. Isn't that, Nate, one of the terms that got kind of taken out of the lexicon for forecasts because people didn't understand what a lot of people were.
It's still acceptable to be used, but, yeah, we try to be a little clearer because, yeah, that's so emotionally laden for people.
Laurie, I did want to pick up on this as well, because part of what you've found in a lot of weather obsession and researching your book that came out a couple of years ago was how much more weather literate we are now. Nate was saying that we have a lot of words from our casual lexicon that have entered the weather vocabulary, but it has started to come the other way as well.
Yeah, great point, Tegan. Actually, it was about 8 or 9 years ago I wrote the book, and what I observed there was this massive change in the 21st century in the way that people access weather. First of all, you've got all these sort of passive ways of doing it. If your phone shows you a temperature when you pick it up, it may not be sourced by the Bureau of Meteorology, maybe it is. But then I think severe weather and the popularity of online articles that can kind of not just tell you what happened, but can run a running commentary on a weather event. So the storms that were experienced, say, in Brisbane and in Melbourne last weekend, it just means that for people to be able to understand that, they need to be able to understand the broader language. And then the terms that you mentioned come from the Southern Oscillation Index, which has always been a natural variable, if you like. But now I think people, if there's an El Nino that is called by the Bureau for the upcoming summer, which happened a couple of years ago, it becomes a real event in its own right. And what's really interesting about that is media outlets then run a whole lot of explainers. And it's incredible now how those terms have become part of the sort of, everyday language when talking about what's happening with the weather.
Yeah, people just have this vocabulary and knowledge that maybe I just didn't have it before. On the text line, Andrew says, I'm a farm contractor. The weather, current and the next few days are critical to the effective performance of my business. Before the recent changes to the BOM website, I could clearly see the current rain radar and wind conditions allowing me to plan for the next few hours, the day ahead, or even the next week. The new website may have that information available, but not all in one place. I don't understand how an upgrade can be a retrograde step in providing information to a community that needs it. And Clonton from Cootamundra says, for pilots like me, our lives and those of our passengers depend on accurate and easily accessible weather forecasts and reports. The fundamental mistake made by BOM was to roll out the changes with no warning to users. Nate, it's a safety issue.
It is. And actually, there were a couple of things there. People probably ignored it, but for quite a bit of time, there was a banner on the top of the website saying that there was this new website that was going to be launched. It had the date. There was a beta version that you could click through to have a look at. So they had given some warning. I'm not necessarily suggesting that it was done the best way it could have been done, but there was some. And all of the information, well, almost all of the information is still there. Certainly the safety critical stuff. So aviation, yes, 100%. Weather is everything. And if you happen to be an aviator, you can still find all of those warnings, all the TAFs, the pilots know what I'm talking about. That's all still there. It's just where you have to click to get to it might have changed, but it is still there. The thing is, Tegan, the website, the old website, wasn't good. It was a pain in the bum to steer around and to find information. But once you did, and once you knew how to get that specific bit of information that you specifically needed, then it all of a sudden felt easy. But, I mean, they've replaced an awful website with one that's not servicing the customers in the way that the customers are expecting, I think.
So much of how we interact with any website is about muscle memory. Laurie, you're in journalism and communication and the way we communicate weather. Do you think it's just about people's expectations when they log on?
It's probably not just about that. I think, yes, it's true. It's a safety issue in a lot of contexts. But I think that it is also a cultural icon, the Bureau of Meteorology. A couple of years ago, when we were told, you know, we can't call it the bomb, what struck me as odd about that request was that it's a real compliment. It's called the bomb. It's a major cultural institution. And I would argue one step further, it's a major media organisation in its own right. So actually, if the rest of the media, and please don't let this happen, but if the rest of the media disappeared overnight, all the material that we would need to understand what's going on in the weather would still be there. And I think in the latest Bureau of Meteorology annual report, I think they had got to a point, and I'm not entirely sure, but of the significance of these figures taken on their own. But over 80% of community people reported the Bureau's services are easy to use, and 92% of emergency management customers surveyed have a good perception of the Bureau. So even though the old site might have had its issues, in a way, it's also been something that people have, got used to using over time. And it may well be that it will take quite a while for people to make that adjustment to what's, whatever this new website is going to evolve into, because obviously they're still working on it. And, I take the Bureau's word that they're going to respond to some of the concerns that have been made now.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor with Professor of Journalism at La Trobe University, author of The Weather Obsession, Laurie Zion, and ABC meteorologist Nate Byrne, talking about why we're so obsessed with the weather, what role it plays in our lives, not just when we're outside, but also the things we talk about, the things that we care to know about. Kim in the Yarra Valley says, "My obsession started young. I come from a surfing, camping, skiing and outdoor activity family. The bomb saved my family's lives in the 2009 Black Saturday bushfires. We were able to make a positive decision not to be in Marysville that day." And Rachel from Nam says, "I love the weather. How would I know when the perfect washing day is without the weather? It shapes our lives and it's the one common denominator with every single living thing in our area. How amazing." And she says, "It is in fact the perfect washing day today." Nate, you are an admin for a social media group called Weather Obsessed that's run by the ABC. More than 170,000 followers. How do you think social media has changed the way we talk about the weather?
Oh, it's brought weather from around the world to our doorsteps and means that we get a way to see how it's affecting people. And I'm talking specifically here severe weather, but then I guess also an amazing sunrise or, funny looking cloud in the sky, or some weird phenomenon where the sun's causing a halo. Those are things that you don't necessarily get to see yourself every day, but they're often happening somewhere in the world. And social media means that those things don't have to be filtered through a time-limited media organization. You know, you can just show pretty things because you want to show pretty things, but then also you can get insights into the, you know, the wild weather that's going on for someone. And we're always interested, because if it can happen to someone else, it could happen to us as well, I think. You know, that's why we are drawn to things like the news and to, you know, in emergencies around the world, because we've got an interest to learn from them in case we have to face that same sort of thing one day.
And yeah, on extreme weather, the climate has changed in our lifetimes, and I think we're starting to see and remember that now. Do you think that that's impacted the kind of the stakes when we're talking about weather?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, we're setting records all the time, whether it's heat or rainfall or flooding, or, you know, we're setting them at a faster rate than we should be, really. And yeah, the stakes are highest, the highest they've ever been. I mean, for more and more of us, things like summer, it's becoming a time to survive rather than to thrive and have a holiday and chill. You know, it's literally life and death, and becoming increasingly so as time progresses.
Mm. Laurie, I'm interested. One of the things that you've looked at in your research is the variations of who is interested in the weather depending on where they live. And I have noticed on the text line, at least, quite a few people saying that they're from Nam. Is that representing what you saw?
Yeah, I think the people in Nam, like me, are very aware of the four seasons in one day motif of Melbourne's weather. The research that's been done on all of this was actually done in the US, but the finding from that is people who have, you know, cold fronts followed by hot days, in other words, where the weather might be quite changeable, are much more likely, or somewhat more likely, to actually be really interested in what's happening on a daily basis. So that said, I do think if you're in Darwin, I went to Darwin as part of the research for this book, and it was just in the build-up period. So people were obsessed by the weather there, because firstly, 36 feels a lot hotter than 34 there when they have those days, but also the thunderstorms come in, when will the monsoon start, all those different things. So some people would probably be more episodically interested in the weather in a particular time of year. But where you've got a climate like what we have in Victoria, Tasmania, Canberra, it means that you really don't know. The weather you've got outside today, which is beautiful, maybe won't last, you know, more than today or even today. And in fact, there's a lot of rain in the forecast at the moment. So people need that information, I think, in order to make even, you know, what might be seen as non-consequential decisions, like what to wear to work, whether to eat outside, do a picnic or whatever. But I wouldn't call these things trivial. I think it's very much part of our culture, the weather, and the information that weather services such as the Bureau provide, I think is genuinely useful to people. And so in that context, I think when people feel that it's harder to reach that information, or that there's been a big change, then definitely they're going to react to that. And so, yeah, so, but I do think that interest in the weather also is reinforced a lot through media, because, you know, it's very hard to get weather systems to move around the country now without them becoming major stories, whether in national-focused media like news.com.au, The Guardian, or local papers as well. So the whole way weather's reported on has changed a lot, and people are engaging with that.
I can only speak from my own experience as a person on tank water and a street that floods. I'm always obsessively watching the number of mils that my rooftop is about to get rained upon it. Well, Laurie, Nate, thank you both so much for joining me. Laurie Zion is a professor of journalism at La Trobe University and the author of a book called The Weather Obsession. And Nate Byrne is, of course, meteorologist on ABC News Breakfast.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.